Tonight, Mr. Gene Kelly stars in To Marry with Love from Studio One at CBS.
Listen, Bill, we'd like to see you settle down, Jock and I.
That's the trouble with you married couples. You're like somebody with a contagious disease. If you've got it, you see no reason why everyone shouldn't have it, too. Why can't you let people alone?
With a moment from To Marry with Love by Richard Sherman, we invite you to Studio One, a full hour of dramatic entertainment from radio's own playhouse. And now to introduce tonight's great story, here is the director of Studio One, Fletcher Markle.
To Marry with Love is the story of 10 years and three people. Mary Wallace, Jock, her husband, and Bill Hallam, their best friend. It's a warm and realistic study of a marriage and a delirious decade, as seen from the point of view of the other man. And tonight, to play Bill Hallam, who tells the story, we have with us in Studio One an actor of bright and beguiling talents, Mr. Gene Kelly. With Mr. Kelly, you'll be hearing Mercedes McCambridge as Mary and Everett Sloan as Jock. Herewith, our version for listening of To Marry with Love by Richard Sherman.
The most wonderful wedding you've ever been to.
We say 10 years ago, and it seems a long time, but I remember you, Mary, and your laugh, and what you said the day you married Jock. Orchestras played Harbor Lights and that old feeling, which were new in 1937. There were sit-down strikes in the automobile factories and air raids on Madrid, and people talked about the marriage of the Duke of Windsor to the woman he loved. In the midst of youth and fame, Gene Harlow died at 26 and George Gershwin at 38. We say 10 years ago, and it seems a long time, Mary. Or does it? I remember you standing in a rice-littered, flower-strewn room at the Copley Plaza in Boston in 1937, wearing an orchid corsage on your wedding dress. You were laughing, and you said to me...
Isn't it wonderful, Bill? Isn't it the most wonderful wedding you've ever been to?
Of course it is.
Darling, you're going to twist my arm right off. That's no way to treat a husband.
Oh, John, darling, I'm so happy I could die. Tell me it'll never be any more wonderful than it is right now. Because if it is, I couldn't bear it.
Who knows, Angel John?
Well, one thing, I don't know how you two could ever be more beautiful and handsome, respectively, than you are now.
Isn't Bill nice, John?
Well,
isn't
it's true.
Good?
It's true. You look like something out of Harper's Bazaar.
Isn't he the man with the words, though?
Unfailingly.
Kiss me again, Jack, darling.
Look, Angel, child, that boat has a definite sailing time, just like any other boat. And much as I love you, we're embarrassing the best man. That is, everybody tells me he's the best man.
Don't listen to them. Bill, it's a little early yet to be making plans, but you know what?
Tell me what?
We're going to name the first one after you because I love you and Jock loves you.
Couldn't be better, sir.
Well, that's fine because I love you guys, too. Okay. Send me a postcard, will you? And don't get seasick.
Hey, aren't you coming down to the boat?
Oh, Bill, darling, you've got to come. We're running out on the others, but naturally it wouldn't be anything at all without you. Would it, Jock?
Well, I should say not. Now,
sure it would. It would be very nice and will be. Anyway, I have to catch the 6 o'clock train. Goodbye, Jocko. Be good to this girl. She's been like a sister to me. That sounds pretty silly, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's sweet.
And take care of yourself, will you? Don't try to visit all the bars in Paris.
You ought to get married, too, will you? You ever think of that?
Quite often. Well, so long, Mary. I'll see you in New York when you get back. We'll have to have a real party.
Hey, you dumb bunny. Aren't you even going to take advantage of your chance to kiss the bride?
Oh. Of course.
I should say.
So I kissed you, Mary, and that made the third time in my life. The first time was when you were 11 and I was 12, and then again 3 years later in a closet at a party where we were playing post office. I didn't kiss you after that somehow until this time, the third time. And as I felt your lips, I thought, the last time. I said I had to catch the 6 o'clock, but I didn't catch it. Instead, I went into the room where the dancing was and drank too much punch. You sent me postcards from Europe, several of them, and a letter, too, with a postscript by Jock.
The trip's been divine, and we're spending more money than we should. I'm in a constant ecstasy, and Jock is a husband out of a million.
Postscript. 10 million. But she's a wife out of a billion. Or are there that many women in the world?
Then you were home again at that little apartment on East 38th Street. The one with atmosphere instead of air. You said I was your first guest, and I must have been, because the meal was certainly terrible, Mary. Even though Jock and I both tried to comfort you by pointing out that you'd improve later on, and that in any event, you could never be worse. Afterwards, we sat in front of your smoking fireplace, and Jock said,
I'm going to make $1 million. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, marvelous.
How are you going to do it?
And when?
Advertising. Within, 5 years, maybe sooner. I'm going to open my own agency.
What with? The money your father left you?
Exactly.
Are you really serious about it, Jock, darling? I thought you were kidding when you mentioned it before.
Oh, I'm absolutely serious. The only business I know. Care to invest the money in the company, Bill?
I'm a lawyer, Jock, not a gambler.
Old Bill C. Hallam. The C is for cautious.
Or canny. Well, it's getting late.
Does it matter?
I'm a working man who starts work before lunch.
Uh-oh, that was most unkind. I'm starting back to work first of next week.
Come to see us a lot, Bill.
Definitely. You know, it can't be very nice, you living in a hotel.
And bring your current passions, whoever they may be. Yeah. We'll arrange it so you can have the parlor on alternate Fridays, with bundling privileges.
Then you might as well know that Mary and I have made a solemn vow. Gashed wrists, mutual tattoos, and a secret hand clasp to marry you off.
No chance.
We give each girl a once-over and a little metal tag. The moment she crosses our threshold, we weigh her in, look at her teeth.
Shut up, Jack. Anyway, you come, Bill. Early and often.
I did come to that apartment, and later to the one on East 56th. I didn't come as frequently as I wanted to because... Well, because... But I did come, and I brought a series of girls. I brought all kinds. Good bridge players and good talkers and good lookers. And even better lookers than you, Mary. Each of them would seem fine to me until they stood in the same room with you. Then I'd realize that whatever they were, and then some of them were nice, they weren't what I wanted. And then one evening, I brought Kitty Brandt. Do you remember, Mary?
Hello, Bill.
Glad you could come, darling.
Jock, Mary, this is Kitty Brandt.
Hello, Kitty Brandt.
Hello, Kitty Brandt.
These are the Wallaces, Kitty.
Hello, Wallaces. You've got a tan. It's a sunlamp.
You've got glamour.
It's a trick.
That was toward the end of the second year of your marriage, and you'd moved to the 56th Street place because Jock was starting to make a lot of money. Got a terrace and a cook and a maid and a pair of Scotties. Kitty Brandt was the full flower of cafe society. She had a brusque, gay, who-cares manner, and you liked her, Jock liked her, and I liked her. And we all had a wonderful time there for several months. We were blissfully lost in our laughter that year while Hitler seized Austria and marched into Czechoslovakia. The Japanese armies carved deeper into China, and the Spanish War was 2.5 years old. Mr. Chamberlain went to Munich, and peace in our time was declared. We saw Max Schmeling knocked out by Joe Lewis and read about Douglas wrong way Corrigan flying to Ireland instead of Los Angeles. The Dion Quintuplets had the tonsils out, and nearly everybody went to see Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. One night, the following year, after the four of us had been going around together a lot, Kitty Brandt said to me,
Listen, how long have you been in love with her?
With whom?
Now, Bill, fencing won't do any good in this conversation. I'm talking about Mary, you know that.
Kitty, you don't seem to get it. She's married to a Mr. John R. Wallace. You know, the handsome one, the one you keep saying dances so well.
Yeah, a fellow named Jock. What of it?
Well, it's an old story. Maybe not a very interesting one, but it so happens by peculiar coincidence that he's my best friend.
Oh, yes, that old line.
So is Mary, and I'm not kidding. We're just three guys who know each other.
I understand. Just three guys who know each other.
That's right.
Isn't that dandy? Joan and Darby and another guy. Damon and Phidias and the girlfriend.
Cut it out, will you?
Is it your impression, Bill, that the best things in life are three?
No.
That's good. Because it isn't mine either.
That was in June. June 1939. We went to the opening of the World's Fair. King George and Queen Elizabeth were eating hot dogs in Hyde Park, and Franklin Roosevelt was sending pleas for peace to Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini. People were eating the grapes of wrath, going to see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and Life with Father began its life on Broadway. Some people were humming songs like the Beer Barrel Polka and Jeepers Creepers, but a lot of others like us made Begin the Beguine popular again, and one of George Gershwin's last ballads became a great hit. In August, on a smoldering, stifling afternoon, I went up to your apartment after work with an evening newspaper under my arm that growled blackly about a smoldering, stifling Europe. I was expecting to meet Jock for a midsummer bachelor's dinner, but I found you, Mary, instead. And at that moment, you were supposed to be off at Bar Harbor, lying on a beach and trying to finish Mein Kampf. I was pleased and surprised, but I could tell from your eyes that there was something wrong.
Hello, Bill.
Well, look who's here.
Yeah, look.
Well, you don't seem very happy.
Have you seen Kitty Brandt lately?
No, at least not very lately. She's been sort of tied up.
So I gathered. Are you in love with her, Bill?
Who, me? Oh, no. Kitty's great fun to be with.
Yes, evidently Jock thinks so, too.
Huh?
Look, this gold lipstick was on my dressing table. It has Kitty Brandt's monogram on it. And I came back because I couldn't bear to be away from him any longer. I came back because I'd rather swelter with him in hot New York than sigh for him at Cool Bar Harbor. No.
Oh, Mary, for Pete's sake, be sensible. There's some mistake. He found it around the house and thought it was yours.
No,
that isn't right either. I remember now, Mary. I had it in my pocket once when I was here and accidentally dropped
it. No, Bill, please.
That's Jock.
Bill, hello.
How did you get here? Well, Mary, darling.
Hello, Jock.
Well, darling, this is wonderful.
No, I don't want to be kissed. Thank you, Jock.
Well, hey, what's wrong?
This is wrong. This lipstick.
What lipstick?
This one, Jock. It was on my dressing table. It happens not to be mine.
Oh, I see. I think I'd better get along. I'll see you.
Look, it didn't mean anything, Mary. I swear it didn't. Kitty's just a... well, she doesn't touch us, not you and me.
Doesn't she? Oh, Jock. Jock, how could you?
Well, you and Jock patched it up, Mary, and you two went away for a while that autumn to Bermuda. And I didn't try to see you before you left because I was embarrassed, and I imagined you would be, too. While you were gone, Hitler marched into Poland, and Great Britain declared war against Germany. I saw Kitty while you were away, just once, in a little bar in one of those September Saturday afternoons when the city's all quiet and empty and breathless. She was sitting alone, and she waved and called me over.
Hello, Galahad. How's six? How's every little thing? How is it with you, Galahad?
Oh, all right, I suppose. What do you think you're doing?
Licking my wound.
What do you have, Mr. Hallam?
The usual, Fred.
Check.
Where's your rat-like friend, Jock Wallace?
Now, don't be arch, Kitty. You ought to know.
I ought to, but I don't. Hadn't you heard he's given me the air?
No.
Well, he has. And all that goes with it. Charming fellow, Jock Wallace. Eyes like little bits of coal. Limbs like a god. Heart like a snake. I say hot. What's the matter?
I guess I don't like you much anymore, Kitty.
Really?
Yes.
Sit down with you, my friend. Sit down before the hearth and let me tell you about a girl who believed she was immune from love because she'd had it. Once upon a time, there was a bright, pleasant young woman. Attractive, too. Said to herself, she said, I can hurt, but I can't get hurt. Oh, Bill, where is he? Why didn't he call?
I met Jock in the Yale Club one evening shortly after that, and he said,
Mary and I are taking a little trip.
Another one? Well, that's nice.
Yeah, going out to California.
Well, how's the advertising business going to get along without you?
No need for it to try. I'm mixing business with pleasure. I might open a branch in Los Angeles. Incidentally, Bill,
yes,
I...
Yes, Jock. Yes, come on. Whenever you say incidentally, it seldom means anything incidental.
Well, I've been meaning to ask you. I was wondering if maybe you'd be interested in coming into the agency with me. You being a legal man, there's a lot of angles and business.
No, thanks, Jock. There's no need to make up anything to me. Kitty and I were never that close.
Well, I...
You have a good rest while you're away, Jock. Don't work too hard. This is no time to worry about expanding. And give my warmest to Mary, will you?
Well, sure.
By the way, how is she these days?
Mary? Oh, she's better.
You were gone almost 2 months that time, Mary, and when you came back, you and Jock seemed as you used to be. At least, practically as you used to be. There was a faint, thin line in the middle of your forehead that hadn't been there your wedding day, and Jock called you Mary, or dear, instead of angel child. Otherwise, things were as they had been, and I remember saying that first evening I saw you again.
Well, there's nothing like travel to perk you up, is there?
It isn't travel, Bill, darling.
No, it isn't.
Shall we tell him, Jock?
Well, I suppose he's old enough. Well, tell me. Well, what's all the fuss?
We're going to have a baby.
A baby? A baby?
Did you ever hear anything so absurd in all your life? I mean, Jock and me being Papa and Mama?
But seriously, and forgive me if I sound tedious, but no, I'm glad. I'm gladder than I could say. That's what you needed.
That's what we thought, too.
Darling.
I'm really terribly pleased.
And remember what we said, Bill, about naming the first one after you. I mean, that still goes.
William Wallace.
Will Wallace. Wee Willie Wallace. It sounds elegant, doesn't it? Like a poet. Or an actor. Though, please forbid.
Better than Wilhelmina Wallace, which it would have to be if... But no. If it's a girl, I guess we'd just have to give you a rain check.
After that, Jock added another important client to the agency, and you moved to the penthouse in Park Avenue. And there were two maids' rooms, and the longest drawing room I've ever seen, and every stick of furniture was new and expensive. Jock was reeling with pride about it.
Well, at least it's a roof over our heads. You wouldn't want our band to be born in destitution, would you? Just think if he had to tell his little friends, my father and mother only have two doormen where they live.
You never looked prettier than during that time when you were having a baby, Mary. You and Jock were so happy that I almost used to dread going up to your place because I knew that when I left to come back to my room, I'd feel worse than if I'd been alone all evening. I had to go down to Charleston on a case that last fortnight before you went to the hospital, and the afternoon before I left, I came up to see you and say goodbye. It was the first time I'd been with you without Jock's being present. It didn't seem right, my being there. Either it didn't seem right or it seemed too right. I wasn't sure which. We discussed a lot of things that afternoon. We sort of let down our hair, and then suddenly you said...
Aren't you ever going to get married and be respectable, Bill?
Sometime. What's the rush? I'm young yet. I want to savor my marvelous youth.
You're 27, the Hemingway age. They tell me a person crystallizes around 27, you know, gets habits. Dirty ashtrays and laundry hampers bother you, and you don't like to hear people whistle or have to wait to get into the bathroom.
Well, that shouldn't be a problem with you. You've got five here, haven't you?
We're talking about you. Or we were. Listen, Bill, we'd like to see you settled down.
We?
Yes, Jock and I. We wonder about you a lot. And we wish that you could discover a nice, companionable girl with charm and intelligence and...
That's the trouble with you married couples. You're like somebody with a contagious disease. If you've got it, you see no reason why everyone shouldn't have it, too. Why can't you let people alone? Why do you have to...
Oh. You don't have to bite my head off. After all, I was only giving you a little well-meant advice. I hope nobody cries at your funeral. And nobody will either, you nasty, grumpy old bachelor. I hate you right now, Bill Hallam.
Do you?
No, I don't. I love you, but you are an awful fool, really.
Maybe.
There's none so blind as those who will see. Old saying.
Yes, yes. None so blind. The arrangement was that Jock would phone me in Charleston, long distance, the moment the baby was born. This was in 1940. The war was rumbling on in Europe, and we were shocked by the collapse of the Maginot Line and Dunkirk and the fall of Paris and the flames of London and the Blitz. Yet, moviegoers were raving about Laurence Olivier and Rebecca, and Mrs. Miniver was the first book you got when you joined the Book of the Month Club. Bonnie Baker pushed a song called Oh Johnny to the top of the hit parade, and nearly every radio program ended with God Bless America. People were just beginning to be aware that we needed a blessing. At last, one night, my phone rang. Hello?
Mr. William Hallam?
Yes, this is he.
Just a moment, please. New York calling.
New York? Hello? Hello?
Hello. Hello, Bill.
Yes, is that you, Jock? Hello, hello, are you there, Jock?
Yes, I'm here. It's a boy.
Oh, wonderful.
It's death, Bill. It was born death.
Oh, that's too bad. But maybe... Well, how's Mary?
Well, she's been kind of sick, but she's better now. The doctors say that she'll be all right. She's...
Hey, Jock. Hello, hello.
The line is disconnected, sir. Your party must have hung up. Shall I get them for you? Shall I get them for you?
Yes. I mean, no. No. No, don't get them for me.
All right, sir.
It wasn't until just at that moment that I finally realized completely that Jock hadn't said death, but dead. Born dead. D-E-A-D. D as in dollar. I sat beside your hospital bed, Mary, when you were at last able to receive visitors, wanting to help you, but not knowing how. Wishing I could say part of what I felt.
What are you thinking, Bill?
You still don't look so hot, Mary. You ought to go away.
I am. I'm going down to Florida for a while. As soon as they let me out of here, if they ever do.
Is Jock going too?
No. Jock's working a lot. He seems to have the feeling that money's the only thing you can be sure you've got when you've got it. In fact, it looks as though we were going to be known as those wealthy Wallaces.
Well, I'd have said you were fairly well fixed already.
Chicken feet. Child's play. Jock's going to expand. Offices in Chicago and Los Angeles. He's founding an advertising dynasty, except that the dynasty's got to have an heir. It wasn't my fault, was it, Bill?
Of course not.
You know how the little listening child is supposed to cement the father and mother together for keeps? Well, it's going to be an interesting experiment with Jock and me because it seems there isn't going to be any child. If...
Mary, don't.
It'll be nice to be rich. Stinking rich, I mean. Be nice to have 6 servants instead of having to scrimp along with 3 and to have cars to match moods. I'm going to love it. You know that room next to mine, the one with all the sunlight in it?
The nursery?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a bar. Jock's having it... made over like an old English pub. The kind they're bombing over there these days. He says it ought to be quite cozy, too, because nobody likes to drink in the darkness. And it'll be convenient for anybody who's addicted to lying awake nights thinking.
I think I'd better go, Mary. I'll be in touch.
I am getting a little hysterical, aren't I? Sorry about not being able to use your name. Jock's thinking about buying a yacht, though, if he gets a certain new client. And we might christen it the SS Bill, if you like.
So you went to Florida. And now and then while you were gone, I saw Jock, though not often. And even when I did see him, I hardly knew him. Something, well, the Midas touch, perhaps, had turned him all hard and metallic like money. Once when we were lunching at the St. Regis, I gathered up nerve enough to try and get at him.
Oh, what's the matter, Bill? Isn't the fish good, or am I talking too much about making money?
Oh, I was thinking of something else. Jock, what's the matter with you and Mary?
Matter? What do you mean?
You know what I mean, Jock. Why all this bitterness on her part and this sudden craze for gold on yours?
This isn't sudden. I've always had a craze for gold, Bill. It's even more fun making it than having it. That's where the kick is.
Yes, but what's this shell around you these days?
Bill, did you ever plan something with somebody for a long time? Live, eat, and spit, and then have the whole thing go fooey?
No, not exactly.
Well, wait until you do. Then you can talk. Oh, we'll get over it. We'll both get over it. But in the meantime... In the meantime, it pays to advertise.
You came back from Florida, Mary, with several trunks full of new clothes, a different way of doing your hair, and Irene and Sloane Potter.
Irene is wonderful. She absolutely made the trip for me, lifted me from whatever I was in, and put me on my feet again.
Well, that's good. You look fine, Mary.
Thank you. Irene and Sloane are brother and sister. Irene has a little dress shop on Madison Avenue. She wants to enlarge. So I'm going to put up some money and go in with her as a silent partner.
That's swell. How about the brother? What's he do?
Sloane?
Mm-hmm. He's nice, too. He's an interior decorator. I'm going to have him do over the apartment. I don't like it anymore. It's too kittenish.
Uh-huh.
Bill, why don't you come up for dinner tonight? We can go dancing someplace, just before.
Where's Jock?
He'll be working.
At night?
Oh, yes. He does most of his entertaining at night. Any one of his three big clients, or prospective ones, all that. Or he sleeps. Jock seems to need an extraordinary amount of sleep for a person of his age.
Are you two... I mean, is he...
You mean, are we getting along all right now? Oh, sure. Sure, Bill, we're as happy as larks. Never a dull moment for the Wallaces, I always say. We even sing before breakfast. Though not to each other.
Mary, listen.
Be off with you, Bill. You and your sentimentality.
We did go dancing that evening, the four of us. And other evenings, too. At all the places people went that spring and summer of 1941. Occasionally, Jock went with us, but not often. And when he did, all he talked about was the agency. He'd sunk an enormous amount of money into opening branches in Chicago and Los Angeles and buying up bright boys to work for him and working himself at the top of his breath. It was a swift, hard, razor-edged life, and he began to complain about his stomach. Sloane Potter usually listened with a polite interest.
Really, Jock? Is that so? You don't say.
You, Mary, rarely listened at all. And Irene would scream.
You and your gold-plated agency, Jack Wallace. You make me sick with envy.
I liked Irene. She was probably nearer 45 than the 35 she claimed, but she had a hearty manner that amused us. It didn't amuse her brother, however. He was younger than she was and had had a sufficiently long residence in England to acquire his idea of an Oxford accent.
Do be quiet, Irene. You're such a fool.
You began to give parties. A series of parties, or perhaps it was simply one long party. Your apartment was always littered with people discussing Ed Murrow's broadcast from London and the big debate over foreign policy, about Wendell Willkie and the V for Victory sign, and Lend-Lease and a young man named Frank Sinatra who was singing with Tommy Dorsey's band. And whatever they talked about, either war or peace, they talked loud.
And then I think something inside of me just died.
You, Mary, and the Potters were inseparable. There was your dress shop venture with Irene, which appeared to be nothing more than a simple way to lose a lot of money. And then there was Sloane's doing over your apartment, which was even more expensive and which, for some reason, consumed more of your time.
Isn't it beautiful, Irene?
It's beautiful, honey, but I'm overwhelmingly thankful I don't have to live in it.
Don't be tiresome, Irene, dear.
Tiresome? Hardly, Sloane, baby. I may be arbitrary, but I'm never tired.
Oh, stop it, you two.
Jock, those rugs in your bedroom, they'll have to go.
What's that? Which rug?
Jock, darling, weren't you listening? The rugs in your bedroom.
I'm afraid they'll have to go. They're not at all the right color.
Oh, aren't they? I kind of like them.
Jock, don't be reactionary.
It doesn't matter much, after all. Go ahead, have a good time. Do what you want.
But you must understand exactly why they're not all right, old man. You come along to the bedroom, and I'll show you.
Oh, do I have to?
Go along, Jock. It's better if you understand.
Yeah. Come on, Jock, honey. I'll go with you. This explanation I must hear.
Well, what do you think of it all, Bill? You've been so quiet.
I don't know what to think. That's why I've been quiet.
Something on your mind?
I guess. Aren't you seeing Sloane quite a bit these days, Mary?
Quite a bit? Why?
He's a phony, and you know it.
Probably he is a phony. Most of us are, in one way or another. But I like him. He takes my mind off things. He flatters me. I'm the rich, misunderstood wife. Sloane is a fascinating playboy.
Fascinating like a cobra. Mary, Irene asked me to take her to lunch the other day.
That was nice. So?
She wanted to warn me about you and Sloane. Wealthy wives are his specialty, apparently, and you're the newest of the group. It's known as Potter's Field.
Well, that's ridiculous. Why do people start things like that?
She wasn't trying to start anything. She was trying to stop it.
Oh, yes, she was. Sloane's warned me about her. She's always been a hindrance to him with her vulgarity and her boisterousness. If she weren't sort of a business partner of mine...
Mary, what's happened to you? You know Irene. She's worth 10 of her brother, and she likes you. She's grateful.
If she likes me, then she'd better tend to her own affairs. If Jock doesn't mind Sloane and I being together, and he doesn't, why should anyone else?
I mind it, for one.
You? What business is yours?
Well, I...
Oh. I'm sorry, Bill. I didn't mean that. But I'm tired these days. I'm nervous.
Shall we join the others in the bedroom?
Nervous. It was a word with a new meaning in those days, like neurotic. Well, the thing went on with you and Sloan. Luncheons, cocktails, and excursions to Jersey furniture factories. And also, naturally, Sloan had to be around to superintend things. Irene was a little nervous, too.
Listen, Hallam, you'd better have a fast chat with Jock. This is my second rattle. We potters never give a third.
And I did have a chat with Jock, or tried to have one.
Potter? Sloan Potter. Don't be silly, Bill.
Jock, I'm no false alarmist. You know that, but I'm telling you...
Look, you're telling me a lot of nonsense. How can anybody sit around discussing triangles these days? I can't. I'm busy. I'm up to my neck. I'm working like sin, and I'm nervous.
Everybody's nervous, it seems. You're working like sin for what? Who are you, Croesus or the king of the Golden River?
Not yet. Our fathers slaved all their lives, but that isn't my idea. I'm going to quit while I'm young, and when I quit, I'm going to have plenty. Two more years, three. After that, the advertising business can rot for all I care.
Business in general may rot long before that, Jock. Any day now. And you haven't got a dime saved. You put out all the money you've got and some you haven't got in opening those branch offices. You're a wreck. You're ill. You're up to your neck, all right.
Never mind. Before you know it, I'll be retired and living on lotuses.
You'll be living alone if you let this thing
go. Now, look, don't keep on about Sloan Potter. An interior decorator. Chintzes and chicanery.
All right, wise guy.
Sure I am. Take it easy, Bill.
All through that fall and early winter, Mary, I watched you with Sloan Potter. And all the time I couldn't say anything, couldn't do anything because I didn't have the right. Then one Sunday morning, you called me and asked me to come over for lunch. Jock had been up all that Saturday night with one client and had gone to the train to meet another client coming in from Chicago. And you were lonely. It had been a long time since you had called me, and longer than that since you'd asked me up alone. I brought you some big yellow chrysanthemums, and we had a wonderful lunch and talked a lot. And then in the middle of the afternoon, you finally got around to it.
Bill, I want your advice and your help.
What's up?
Sloan went to Mexico yesterday.
So?
Yes, and I'm leaving by plane tonight to join him and some friends of his there for a couple of weeks, perhaps longer.
Mary! Oh, Mary, no.
I'd like your advice, but not about that part. I'm going, my mind's made up, and nothing anyone says can stop me.
I see.
Sloan doesn't want me to tell Jock. That's why he went on in advance. He says I should pretend I'm going on a vacation by myself, but I think I ought to tell Jock. I wanted to know if you thought so, too. So Jock never told me about Kitty Brandt. I had to find that out for myself.
Women and elephants. Oh, I feel very tired.
Well, I must say you don't act as though you were exactly swept off your feet. And you don't appear to be much inclined to give me the advice I ask for. What's the matter? Aren't you interested? Am I boring you? I'm sorry to have bothered you.
Mary, you don't love Sloan Potter. You can't.
I can't? Oh, who says I can't? It may not be love, but it's near enough not to make any difference. That's Jock. All right, I bored you with my little story. I may as well bore him. Jock? Is that you, Jock? Is that my hardworking husband?
Yes. Yes, it's me.
Well, come in, darling. Don't stand out there in the hall.
I'm coming, dear. I'm coming here. Oh, hello, Bill.
Jock, you don't look well.
No, I'm not, I guess. I had to match drinks with old man Chatfield. He's had a big breakfast, and I didn't have time for any.
Jock, are you ill?
Well, I don't know. I didn't do very well with Chatfield, I guess. I don't think I'll get the account. He must have a stomach like a cast-iron tank. Well, look at me. I can hardly stand up. I need some sleep. Is there any food?
Jock, darling, look out for the lamp. He's fainted.
Oh, he went out like a light.
Oh, Jock. Jock, darling.
That was in December. Around 3:30 in the afternoon on Sunday, December the 7th, 1941. We hadn't had the radio on, and we didn't hear about Pearl Harbor until we called your doctor about Jock. That day was the end of a lot of things.
¶¶
From Studio One, Radio's own playhouse of dramatic entertainment, you're hearing Gene Kelly starring in To Marry With Love, a version for listening by Fletcher Markle of the Richard Sherman novel. Our story will resume after the customary pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Studio One, we continue tonight's full-hour dramatic entertainment. Gene Kelly stars in Fletcher Markle's production of To Marry With Love.
In the spring of 1942, a few months after Pearl Harbor, Jock was worth exactly nothing. Remember, Mary? The business of his three major clients was immediately affected by entry into the war, and they canceled their contracts. One of Jock's brightest associates enlisted, another was drafted, and his high-powered organization collapsed. Bills for the lush offices in Chicago and Los Angeles showered in, and from a hospital bed, Jock watched his company and his plans dissolve into red ink on a ledger. Jock was very tired and old inside, too sick to think clearly. It was worth exactly nothing, and he owed nearly $50,000. He was a little stupefied, but he was gallant.
Well, I learned how to go to the top, Bill, and now it's very simple. I just have to turn around and learn how to go to the bottom. Probably it'll be hard on Mary for a while.
Jock didn't realize, had no way of realizing, that it was hard enough on you already, Mary. No, you didn't go to Mexico to join Sloan Potter. The responsibility of Jock had made you your old self again, and you were entirely wonderful. Obviously, women need to be needed. Instead of going to Mexico, you went to a rented house in Flushing with Jock.
How do you like it, Bill? Flushing, Long Island. A pretty place.
I like it fine.
Lots of trees, lots of nice, comfortable bungalows, lots of kids named Junior and Sister running around. Isn't that right, Jock?
Sure. Lots of respectable people are born, grow up, and die in Flushing.
Well, it's a different world from the one you've been accustomed to.
Well, we're lucky to be in it.
How are things coming, Jock, really?
My $50,000 in the red, you mean?
Oh, that too.
Well, we're fixing that, the furniture, the two cars.
My ermine and my mink. I've even got some jewels built. Isn't that romantic?
And my life insurance, all that, you know.
Oh, we'll be all right. Jock will get a job with somebody. And I'm going to stop treating the dress shop like a toy. Irene and I have got some wonderful ideas.
I'm glad. But it's going to be rough. It's not much fun to be on the home stretch when the race is called off on account of darkness.
Well, you're getting quite poetic, Bill. Maybe that's the way to look at it.
The place in Flushing needed laughter to make it bearable, and it got it from various sources. I came, Irene came, as bluff and body as ever, and a few others came, but not many. There was gas rationing then, and people were too tired to come all the way on the train unless they had to. On Sunday afternoons, we sat in your living room and discussed the war and listened to news broadcasts. We talked about John Barrymore, who died that year, and Superman and Ernie Pyle, and how everybody was saying, "Don't you know there's a war on?" An answer to every problem. We knew there was a war on. It was sad for us, just as it was sad for lots of other people in lots of other ways.
Come, come, Wallace, don't mope. I didn't trek clear out here just to attend a wake. Irene wants light, gaiety, faster music, stronger wine. Amuse
me. Take it easy, Irene. I don't think Jock's in the mood.
No, I'm afraid not.
I was only trying to cheer you up, honey. Snap you out of it.
Well, not much use. Not much point.
Why doesn't Mary get back from the store? How long can you take getting a bottle of milk on Sunday?
You know what, Bill? Irene?
What, Jock?
It's no good. Nobody's got a job for me in the advertising racket anymore. Not any kind of a job. Not my kind of a job, anyway. I'm out of gear. All the guys are converted but me.
You've probably been talking to the wrong people, Jock.
Sure you have, honey. Everybody's wrong, then, because I've talked to everybody. Nobody trusts me, it seems. They think I'm crazy.
I tried to tell him I'm just a little tuckered out.
Now, look, you need a little more rest, Jock. That's all.
Rest? I've been resting for weeks. There's nobody else to go and see.
Look, you two want to talk. I'll go out to the kitchen, get the oven on and all that stuff. Mary will be back any minute.
Jock.
Yes?
Let me loan you some money.
No, thanks. Mighty nice of you, Bill, but I don't think that we need it, at least not yet. Mary's doing all right with Irene at the shop. Something will turn up pretty soon.
Just say the word.
Sure. Isn't it funny how almost everything changes into nothing sooner or later? It's like sleight of hand, isn't it, Bill? So what happens now?
I wish I could tell you.
Well, I'll just sit and wait to be drafted, I guess. Or I could enlist. Hey, aren't you liable to be drafted, Bill? You're the eligible bachelor.
No, not yet. Even if I wanted to be. Not until I finish this case down in Washington.
You're lucky. Wish I had something to do.
Hello, everybody. I'm back.
Oh, hello, dear. How's the great outside world?
This was along during the summer and fall of 1942. The war had at last made an impression on everyone, and there was a great humming and business all through the country. Paul Robeson was playing a thundering Othello on Broadway. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition was in every jukebox. Suddenly, one day, Jock went into New York and attempted to enlist. They turned him down. They didn't like the speed of his heart or the state of his stomach. Well, that didn't help much. It was his last gesture, and it had failed. Just as I was leaving the office one night, you phoned me, Mary, and after talking about various inconsequentials, you said...
By the way, what do you do for a hangover?
Who's yours?
Well, by marriage, it's Jock. He's in quite a state.
Really?
I've given him black coffee and all the other hangover remedies, but they don't even scratch the surface.
Well, pin him out to dry.
Sure. Why not?
I laughed then. And I laughed the next time I was out at Flushing and found Jock in the throes of another morning after. And I laughed the time following that. Then I stopped laughing. You tried to burlesque it, Mary. You tried to be offhand about it, but the fact was there. Jock was going to pieces.
What'll I do, Bill? What do I do? Put something in the coffee or what?
Let me talk with him.
Talk? I've done that. It doesn't do any good.
Well, how is he today? He vanished upstairs as soon as I came in.
You're all right today. I'm a little jittery.
Hello.
But here he comes now. You can see for yourself.
Oh, how are you, Bill? Good to see you.
I'm fine, Jock.
I look fine.
I'm going to fix some sandwiches. I won't be long.
Guess I don't look like much, huh?
Well, I've seen you look better, Jock.
Oh, I know what you're thinking. I know. Yeah, it's tough on Mary and it's tough on me. I oughtn't to touch another drop, and I won't. I'm going to stop. Kick it out of the way, but... I get so tired just sticking out here by myself while she's at business, and a drink or two passes the time.
Why don't you get a job, Jock? I mean, any sort of job. There must be something you can do.
Sure, turning wheels in a defense plant. Wouldn't expect me to try that, would you? Man's got standards, you know.
Standards have to be adjusted to circumstances.
Well, we'll see. We'll have to do something.
It went on for a long time. Jock would swear off, and then, without warning, he'd go on a tear.
I'm getting really desperate about him, Bill.
Well, why don't you send him someplace? Out in the country to a farm. It might be just what he needs.
Farm?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Barred window, male nurses, lights out at night. No, well, I couldn't do that, Bill. Even if it were what he needed, I couldn't do it. Which is just as well, because he couldn't afford it anyhow.
Mary... Jock gave me some money once, a couple of $1,000. Why don't you take it now?
You lie. You sweet lie.
No, he really gave it to me to keep for
him. Oh, you better stop. You better stop or I'll begin to cry. I wouldn't want to do that. No, I've a feeling things are going to improve, Bill. They say it's always darkest just before dawn, don't they? Well, it's pretty dark now.
Your feeling was right, Mary. Jock got a job in the public relations office of a government agency. Oh, it wasn't much of a job, and it wasn't a large salary, but it was in his line, and it kept him out of bars. I've been crazy, but I've got a lot of things to make up for, and from now on, I'm okay. You watch. I did watch him. He seemed to be okay. He buckled down. He dug in, and he was dry as a bone. It wasn't done in a day. It wasn't done in a month or 2 months, but it was done. On Christmas Eve, 1942, we had a party. You, Jock, Irene, and I. It was a Dutch street party. You furnished the house, I bought a turkey, Irene paid for a maid to come in and cook it, and Jock supplied the Christmas spirits. Irene had to catch a train to Philadelphia later, so we came early.
Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas!
You dear, you're...
God rest you, Mary.
come in.
Ooh, look at that hideous red paper bell on the chandelier.
Oh, it isn't hideous at all, Irene. It's very, very festive.
Thank you, kind Bill.
Where's Jock?
Jock phoned that he'd be a bit late.
Oh.
Let's all go in and sit down, shall we?
We had some of Jock's Christmas spirits, and Irene told a few mild stories. None of them especially you'll like. You turned on the radio, and White Christmas swelled out wherever you dialed. That went on for about an hour. Then at 8 o'clock, the maid stuck her shiny face into the room and said,
Wallace, that damn bird's kind of drying out, and I got a friend waiting.
We knew by then, of course. We knew. But we went on with our act. And at 9, you said,
There's no use waiting. He's been delayed somewhere. We'd better eat, since Irene has to leave.
So we did eat. Or rather, we sat down at the table with a lot of food on it. None of us took much. Our conversation had run low, too, so we didn't talk. You just sat there, trying to pretend you weren't listening for steps on the porch. After dinner, we played gin rummy for a while, with you not paying any attention to the cards. Then it was time for Irene to go. She wanted to stay and keep you company, but you wouldn't let her.
I'll be all right, Irene. Jock won't beat me, you know. In fact, you'll be doing well if you can put one foot in front of the other. Anyway, Bill's here.
Sure, old Bill.
Old dog train.
Hurry, Irene, you'll miss your train.
Well, it certainly was a jolly meal. You know what I'd do if I were you, don't you, Mary?
Yes, but...
I know. Look, it's snowing.
Hurry now, that train.
I'm going. And as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, dears.
Merry Christmas.
Irene was gone, and we were alone, for the maid had left, too. There was no sound except for the ticking of the clock. I watched the hands touch 11, then 12.
Merry Christmas. Merry, merry Christmas.
Most of that time, we didn't speak. I sat looking at you, Mary, and you sat looking at the gas log. At 1:30, you got up and said...
Have you no home, Bill?
I'm staying until he comes.
No, Bill, you...
Yes, it's all settled, Mary.
All right. But I warn you, he isn't a pretty sight when he gets like this. Try the Davenport. I'm going to bed.
I lay down, but I couldn't sleep. Neither could you. I heard you turning on the other side of the wall. Probably you were thinking about Jock, but I wasn't. I was thinking about you. I was thinking about you a lot too much, so much so that I got up and felt for my cigarette and sat smoking in the darkness, watching the snow drift down under the street lamp on the corner. I smoked 1, 2, 3 cigarettes in a chain, and as I was reaching for the fourth, I heard your voice very close to me saying,
I'll have one, too. It seems to be my night for insomnia.
Oh, Mary. Hello.
Can I have one, too?
Sure. Here you are.
Me, too. Handshaking.
Well, my arm was asleep. I was sleeping on it.
You always smoke in your sleep?
Oh.
Butterfingers. Wait, I'll switch on the lamp.
No, don't.
No?
No. Listen, Mary. I'm in love with you.
Don't be silly. The night. The fact that you're here alone with me and you feel sorry for me.
No.
I should have stayed in my room. I'll go back.
I've always loved you, ever since I can remember, Mary. Oh, Mary.
Bill, don't kiss me.
Oh, darling. Oh, my darling. My darling.
The door, will you answer it, please?
Oh. Oh, yes?
Say, there's been an accident.
What?
an accident. I run over a guy that lives at this address, and I took him to the hospital, and I thought maybe you'd
How badly is he hurt? He isn't...
Dead? No, he wasn't when I left him anyways. A couple of ribs.
Mary!
Yes, Bill?
It ain't my fault. He was drunk, blind drunk. Why didn't he watch out where he was going? I blew my horn, didn't I? Fine Christmas this is. A fine Christmas.
In the spring of 1943, there were casualty lists coming back across both oceans. After the case in Washington was over, I had a chance to go overseas with the Army Intelligence, so I enlisted. While I was at OTS, I used to get letters from you beginning...
Dear Bill, I enclosed $50 on a card. Jock is still at the farm, and though he doesn't like it much, I think it's doing him good. It should anyway, because alcohol's just a liniment there, and he chops wood all day long. How are you? When do you get a leave?
I was all right, but I only got that one leave before going overseas, and I came to see you.
Yes. Jock's much better now.
You've been absolutely wonderful with him, Mary.
I've done everything I can, that's all.
And that's enough.
You didn't, by any chance, go into the Army on my account, did you, Bill?
Nah, you said that without thinking, Mary. This is a pretty big war. Oh, I don't know. Maybe you had something to do with it.
We'll miss you.
I'll miss you, too. I'm sorry, Mary.
Sorry?
Yes. Well, what happened the night Jock was hurt, I guess I should have apologized before now, but it's a little like apologizing for having red hair or something like that.
Forget it, Bill.
Have you forgotten it?
Yes.
I guess it's better that way. Goodbye, Mary.
Goodbye, Bill. Good luck.
To the war, and it was a long, long time. I took girls out, wherever there were girls to take out, and I made love to them, and I tried to convince both them and myself that I was serious, but I was still faithful to you, Mary. You were the works with me, and I realized that you always would be. I got more news of you through Irene's letters than through your own. You simply wrote about Jock's health and the interest on the money I made you take. I thought about you at curious times and in curious places. You never know when you're going to bump into a remembrance when you're working in a war. Twice people sent me newspaper clippings that made me think of you. One of them said, Mrs. Sloan Potter sues for divorce. And I wondered who she was, and I was glad it wasn't you. The other was a story about a woman committing suicide by inhaling gas in a cheap Broadway hotel. And the woman's name was Brandt. Kitty Brandt. The night I got back to New York after VJ Day, we all arranged to meet. Jock was looking very fit. Looking better than you did, for you were thin, and there was a little zigzag of white under your hat that I'd never seen before. Jock had a new job, a small job, with an agency he liked, and it all looked pretty good.
Oh, I can take anything now. From here on, Mary gets a little rest.
You're looking wonderful, Jock.
Isn't he, though?
Well, let's have a toast to the new Jock Wallace. And let's trust that he's a better man than the old one.
Well, here's to
Jock Wallace.
And another one to Mary. She remade me into what I am today. I hope she's satisfied.
Here's to Mary.
To Mary.
Thank you, gentlemen.
That was along in the spring of 1946. Didn't see much of you, though you had moved in from Flushing and had taken a small apartment near Riverside Drive. You were keeping on with the dress shop, and Jock was working hard, too. The Wallaces were climbing the ladder again, more slowly this time, but more surely. And yet, whenever I met Jock, he struck me as being a little depressed. No, not exactly depressed either, but like a man who's afraid something is going to happen, but isn't quite sure what.
Why don't you come and see us more often, Bill? You were in on the black days. You might as well be in on the brighter ones, too. Because they're going to be brighter.
Well, I'm sort of busy, Jock.
Busy? Who isn't? That's no reason for snubbing us. Mary's crazy about you, you know, and I think she's hurt. She acts kind of funny whenever your name's mentioned. Say, When are you going to get married?
Me? Never.
Well, remarkable institution, matrimony. Just look at Mary and me. No. Better not look at Mary and me. Look at somebody else.
If it hadn't been for Jock's attitude, it might almost have seemed that everything was as it had been 10 years ago. You were together, you were headed upward, you were safe and secure once more, and I was there watching you, as always, on the outside, looking in. We say 10 years ago, and it seems a long time. What does it? One afternoon, a couple of weeks ago, you came to my office and sat by my desk. You were looking very trim in a new outfit. That is, I imagine it was new. I hadn't seen you in so long that I really didn't know. You smiled and said...
This isn't a social call, Bill. It's business.
Business? What's happened? Aren't women buying dresses anymore?
Just the opposite. A chain is buying us out at an incredible figure. Irene is going on a long holiday, and the chain wants me to keep on managing the store as a separate unit. At a salary. A good salary.
Swell. And you want me to read over your contract and see that there are no concealed trapdoors. Is that it?
No, that's not it. You were in on the beginning, Bill. You might as well be in on the end. I've left Jock. I want a divorce, and I want you to get it for me.
Oh. Is there another man?
No. And there won't be. From now on, I'm the cat that walks by itself. I've thought it all out. I've made my decision. I've already moved to a hotel. And I want you to tell me about the next steps. Do I go right out to Reno or what? Do I state outright that I don't want alimony or will that be assumed? All those things.
What are your grounds, Mary?
What grounds are there?
Well, it depends on the state. Adultery, mental cruelty, chronic alcoholism, non-support. Which will it be?
None of those. He has grounds, too.
Mary, why are you leaving him now?
Why? I stayed with him when I could be of help to him, Bill. I was the biblical wife. His sorrows were my sorrows. His joys were my joys. But now we're all right again. Both of us are all right. He has his business. I have mine. We don't need each other anymore, that's all. We've nothing in common. Will you make me out a bill of complaint or a brief or whatever it's called? Say it's incompatibility. Say it's mutual fatigue. Say it's just 10 years. Will you, Bill?
Yes, if you want me to.
I do.
You turned and went to the door quickly, leaving me standing there looking after you. So I sat down at my desk with a blank sheet of paper before me. I sat there quite a while. The whole world was going home to dinner, but I remained where I was, though I didn't write anything. I just sat. And then there was a soft noise at the door, and a voice said...
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Jock.
She left me. I don't even have her address. She wants a divorce.
I know. She was here. Have you been out in the rain?
Yes, I've been walking. Bill, where is she? She can't leave me now. She can't.
Yes, she can, Jock. And I'm afraid she's going to. Take it easy, Jock.
You can talk. You've never loved her as I have. You don't know what she can mean to a man. She's... Oh, help me, Bill. She might listen to you. She knows you're disinterested. Tell her that I won't interfere with her business plans. Tell her that the future isn't going to be like the past. Tell her she's all I have, all I want.
She's engaged me as her counsel, Jack.
As a... Oh, I see.
I'm sorry.
I'd hope you might be able to do something. We have so much in common, Mary, and I... It doesn't seem...
What?
I said we have so much in common. It doesn't seem right. It doesn't... Goodbye, Bill.
After he'd left, I didn't move for several moments. I was trying to remember where I'd heard that phrase, "We have so much in common." Then I did remember. You had said something like it in this room just a short while before. something like it, only different. You said,
"We've nothing in common."
I sat down at my desk again with that blank paper in front of me. It was night now, and the entire building was quiet. And I thought of the way your voice had sounded early one Christmas morning when I'd called your name in a dark house, and you answered.
"Yes, Bill?"
I thought of you calling.
"Is that you, John? Is that my hardworking husband?"
I thought of you lying in a hospital bed saying,
"It wasn't my fault, was it, Bill?"
And of the day that you announced,
"We're going to have a baby, Bill."
And of the lipstick that trembled in your fingers as you said,
"And I came back because I couldn't bear to be away from him any longer."
I thought back, far back, to that night in the Copley Plaza in Boston when you wore orchids on your wedding dress and said, "No, not to me.
Tell me it will never be any more wonderful than it is right now."
I thought of all those things and of times passing and the way the years shuttle into each other like the sections of a collapsible drinking cup. And after that, I thought of the paper before me, a bill of complaint you had said you wanted, a brief. Yes, I would send you a brief, though not the kind you expected. This brief would be made up of the things you had done together, you and Jock. The things you had done and the words you had spoken and the rooms you had lived in and the songs you had sung. You and Jock together. And I, too, though that doesn't matter. After reading my brief, you could do what you liked about it. Tear it up and ask for another, as you have every right to do, or go to find Jock. You would know where he is. You would know he'd be waiting. He's waiting now. And I thought of all that, and then I began to write. And this is what I have written to you, Mary, with love.
From Studio One at CBS, you have just heard Gene Kelly in Fletcher Markle's script and production of To Mary with Love by Richard Sherman. Another full-hour dramatic entertainment from radio's own Playhouse. Tonight's musical score was arranged and conducted by Alexander Semler. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting.